So now the story is like this. The story is, like we did last week. You were here last week, Shmuley?
I was here last week, yeah.
You weren't here?
I either wasn't here last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't even remember anymore.
Last week.
Oh, but you were on the call, you said.
Yes. No, last week was the week that Zevi was here.
No, last week I was just here.
It was just you?
That's because the week I was sick, right?
Oh, you said that was the excuse.
One week I was sick, but that was the only week I didn't come.
Okay, the Ketra story is like this. The Ketra story is like this, that there's something called how to be good. And there's... Don't look at that. There's not, I can't. It's not going to work.
Okay.
It's fine.
Because it's showing now. It just doesn't show you. So it still shows the chair.
So it's useless. It got frozen. Bye. Close it. Close the whole thing. Just bye. Whatever. Point is like this. The point is that we got into this problem. Okay, and we're going to discuss this problem today. At least we should understand the problem, okay? Problem is like this. No. Problem starts with the problem before, right? With this, we got into a discussion that there's such a thing called being a good person. And there's also a art or knowledge or wisdom of being a good person. Nachon? The first thing called, how do we call it? Midas, having correct virtues. And the second thing called...
Knowing how to exercise the virtues?
No, the opposite. I mean, you could call it this way, but the other one called wisdom, right? Practical wisdom, as opposed to theoretical wisdom, which is not about knowing how to be good.
It's
about
knowing how to get those good virtues, right?
Maybe.
Or living by, or maybe. Acting them out.
Maybe. But in any case, it's the science or the knowledge associated with acting good. Nachon? Do we know all of that already? These are like things that are on the basis of all this whole theory of being good called ethics, which we are discussing, which the Rambam is based on and everything starts from, right? Now we got into a problem, which was, let's say what our problem is, okay? Because there's original problems and our problems, and they're not always the same. We got into, us, Eden, here in Lakewood, wherever, got into a problem, which is, that it's hard for us to understand what kind of thing would it even be, would be this wisdom, this kind of knowledge. Is that a problem that we have? Yeah? Could we explain the problem better?
What this practical knowledge would be.
Yeah, the relevant kind of knowledge to behaving, acting well, to acting good, right? We don't even know what that kind of knowledge would be. Or it's hard for us to understand. Why? Why is it hard for us to understand?
We don't think of these things as wisdom, right? Or as something you know. Even as something you fight.
So firstly, because we tend to think of... when we think of knowledge or wisdom, we tend to think of what Aristotle would call theoretical knowledge. Okay? This is, I'll try to make it a little more complicated in a minute, or clearer. And we tend to associate that kind of knowledge with also being able to work for specific statements about what is good. Does that make sense? Because people go around saying, I already know what is good, I just don't practice it. So I'm not missing knowledge, I'm missing some other thing, which nobody knows what it is, right? In other words, the kind of knowledge that we think is relevant is some kind of abstract knowledge, something that's like a statement. I know that this is good. So that, anything that starts that, is really like a truth statement instead of a good statement in our understanding. Does this make sense? Yeah? Hope so. And we think that that's really what is meant when we say knowing the good. And then we say, okay, I know this, but it's totally unhelpful because I'm still not doing it. So we must need something else. Comes the Heilige Rambam, comes the Heilige Aristotle and says, no, you're not missing entirely that. That's not your problem. You actually are missing some kind of knowledge. you are missing some kind of knowledge, which is that you don't know how to be good. You don't know what it is to be good. In some sense. In the sense that's relevant to acting. If you will know it, you will at least be closer to actually being good. There might still be another step, but you'll at least be actually closer than where you are now. And this kind of knowledge we call something in between acting and knowing, right? Turns out to be something in between. And it's even hard now. So first problem that we have, and this is to distinguish it from the kind of problem that Aristotle has that we discussed, which is the circularity here, which is really the way the problem gets set only after you accept that there's such a kind of knowledge at all, right? The problem that we have is a problem before that, that it's hard for us to imagine, to understand what kind of knowledge are we even talking about. Make sense that we don't know? Because if I go around telling people, you don't know how to be good, they're like, what does that even mean, right? And we spent a lot of time to try to explain that. Right? What kind of explanations did we get to? A lot of them. If you go through all the way from the beginning of the, when we started to study this subject, you'll see that there was a lot of different kinds of explanations to try to get at this. The latest one, which we discussed last week, right, was trying to get at the kind of knowledge that comes out of knowing a certain kind of behavior or a certain kind of action, right? And what we started off was, and Aristotle also starts off this way, but we're not, nobody here ever actually read Aristotle, so it's a waste of time when I refer to him. But anyways.
Last week we were talking about like knowing someone's story and yes. Their circumstances, you mean?
Yes. But a little more broadly, what we really started off last week with, or maybe the week before already, was to compare this, what we did last week was something. What we did last week was one thing, and there's other ways of doing it. But let me say the first way, and then the way we maybe more explicitly did last time. What we did was firstly to compare it to a kind of art, right? And what Aristotle calls practical wisdom is the kind of wisdom that knowing an art is, only applied to activities and not to products. Because arts are about creating things, products. The end is not in the making, it's in the thing that gets made. While we're talking about acting goodly, so the end is the goal is in the kind of way that you're behaving, not in the thing that you're making. But it's still the kind of knowledge that you get. And we can see, and this we can see how, I don't think we didn't discuss this, Mushal, in this way of getting to it in this specific class, but we can see how studying a certain art, any art, art in the sense of creating artifacts, right, when you create certain things, there is a virtue that you learn from doing that, right? So like anyone that studies any kind of art receives a, we call that a certain eye for the correct version of that or for the good version of that or a kind of judgment about what is it that makes a good painting a good painting or a good statue or a good table, a good table. So and this is something, I don't think, maybe we didn't go through this one here. But this is something where we could see in any practice, any kind of human practice, you see that it gives you both an objective standard, so not about what you like, it's really about the kind of good that belongs to that thing. But it's not something that can be, at least not easily taught from teaching, from words, not something that's purely words telling you like it has to be proportionate, all kinds of words like that. Those are words that help you mostly after you've done the practice. Or after you've achieved this wisdom called being a person with a good eye for that, or with good judgment for these kind of things. Is that correct? Did we go through this example ever here? Didn't.
What, by doing things?
The idea of the starting off to understand what a practical wisdom would be by talking about regular arts, not specifically moral things, but any kind of creation that people do.
Is there any other kind of knowing where the aim of the knowing is like an activity versus a product except for the domain of ethics?
That's what ethics is about. It's about human activity. There isn't anything else.
Right.
Talk about things like playing a game, which is a kind of behavior. Say that.
Right. I guess they're not good questions. Because how to be, let's say, how to be a Okay.
Yeah, that's an ethic. How to be a warrior, how to be a good, all of these things are ethics.
Right. Okay.
How to be a good warrior, how to be a good person that works in the service industry, how to give good service, how to be a good soldier, all these things are literally virtues. That's exactly what we mean when we say virtues. Not anything more, not anything less, or at least that's where we start. I'm not saying what it means. What I'm getting at is what the kind of thing it is, right? It's not easy to explain. Actually, it's probably impossible to explain. There are explanations, but they're not useful to anyone that doesn't have the experience. Does that make sense? If you have, you know how to be a good salesperson, there's a certain kind of virtue of what that is, and you get trained into that from watching other people who have that virtue, from practicing it, and aiming at whatever the good or the goal of that kind of practice is, you build into yourself this intuition or this knowledge or this judgment of how that is. But it's not something that it's just, what it's not is, does that make sense?
It's definitely not a series of facts about.
It's not a list of facts or a list of rules, even if it can be transcended as rules, right? After, just to be clear, after you do this kind of thing, right? If you do this kind of thing, and all these things are really a kind of person. That gets us to the next thing of talking about kinds of people. But all of, after you train as a professional, right? You talk about this thing of being a professional, which is a kind of ethic. You train in that, and then you know what is spoken about. You know what I'm talking about when I say there's the kind of good person, the kind of virtue of a person, the kind of character who is a professional. He's more. You can be more or less professional. You understand what I'm talking about. Then you could come to my class and say, I want to refine this. I want to see better what it means to be a professional. I could give you some kind of definition. I could say that being a professional is... You don't know what it is. Being a professional is being someone who doesn't bring all of himself to work. Okay? The opposite of what they say in Google. That's what
like a professional in a craft. Like
a professional in the sense of the ethics, the virtue of being a professional. Versus the opposite of professional is Heimish. Okay? And there's a correct amount of Heimish, a correct amount of professional, because you don't want to be just a machine, like a forum that to interact with, but you also don't want to be entirely corrupt. The opposite of professional is a kind of corruption. That's at least how we see it. This is a very good example, because you could see that this is not necessary. No, it's not that I have a proof that it's good to be professional. In specific contexts, in specific cultures, the way it works, it's good to be a professional. And we need people that have that virtue, and otherwise the system falls apart, otherwise there's bad results. We can imagine a world in which professionalism is not a thing at all. You probably know that world. And it would be even hard to judge it as for not having this virtue. Not necessarily, but within the context, if you work in corporate America, then you're not going to survive without that. It's also a kind of good that they believe in, right? It's good for a person, not the only virtue of a person, there's others, but it's good for a human being to be professional in his work, right?
You can be professional outside of it.
Maybe it's not good to be professional outside of it, maybe it is. Those are different questions, but my point is that you all know what I'm talking about when I say this only because I give you some examples, and because you've seen the practice or you know the practice. Some other person, it's very hard to even explain him what it means. Doesn't know that there's such a good, there's not such a kind of person. He never saw it, never heard of it. I give him this theory, you know what means be Heimish, and so he's always going to give the very weird interpretation. This is a very good example, because it's a virtue that we don't believe in Heimish land. But you could see how in other world context it's a very good virtue, and how it's believed and how it's there's a practice until, and it's not like they just have a mission. It's not arbitrary. I'm going to get to this in a second. But you can see what I mean, that you need training. But if you come to, that doesn't mean that there isn't the knowledge associated with this. The person that's a professional knows. He's not just acting. He's not just acting or just liking. It's not just like corporate people for some reason like that. They don't like it. Not in the sense of enjoying it specifically. They like it in the second sense of liking, and like we said, they think it's good, right? They like it in the sense of thinking it's good to behave this way in this like set of behaviors in this set of contexts. But they don't like it. It's not like just a bunch of people that have this mishigas. For some reason, they like when you say Mr. so-and-so instead of Yankel. Why would anyone like that? Not that they like it. It's that they see that as the correct behavior which leads to good results, and it's in itself a certain virtue, itself self-control or however you want to explain it, a certain objectivity and so on.
Controlled presentation.
Yeah, but you could see that this is something that if you would not have the experience, or like experiences has a lot of levels, you could read a book about it and understand it, or you could literally live in the context and work in it, or you could watch people that act this way, then you could, then you have the first step of knowing, you could, you've seen it, you've seen this kind of good, you've seen this kind of virtue. And then there's something that you learn, there's something, and it can even be refined by talking about, right? This is the question, do we gain anything by talking about things? Yes, we do. Because human beings are, even in their senses where they're not entirely rational, even the faculties where, like I'm talking about behaviors, I'm not talking about doing math or doing like casualness in your head, but it is influenced by how you see it. If I give you a new concept, if I refine your concept of what it means to be professional, you will be able to apply slightly better judgment in all kinds of borderline situations where we're not sure. So if you have a certain definition in your head, it will help you. It will help you make judgments. But that's not what it consists of, right? The wisdom doesn't consist of knowing this formulation. It consists in knowing how to act and knowing what kind of good it is to be a professional. Does that make sense? So that's the first example, and Aristotle also starts with such examples. So it helps us see this. Now, right? Another, now, the thing, just to be a little, to get to, maybe this would be a way to get to the way of talking about narrative that we talked about last week. The thing with this is that it's very local, right? Extremely local, extremely, nobody, like it's, we don't really even believe that there's something good for a human being in being this. Just like if you want to be successful at your job or something, you should have this virtue. But we're not sure that there's some kind of human being that is like that, or that that's a good way of being a human being, or that's one of the good ways of being a human being. We do believe that, but we just don't articulate it that way. Right? We see this as a set of behaviors more than like of something that exists and what kind of person you are. Although it is a kind of person, but maybe most people, if you ask them if they want to be professional as a kind of person, they would say no. That's why. Because we're not sure that that's a good kind of person. Or at least it's very totally incomplete, right? It's definitely not the only kind of person. And then that's full story. Well, so now you see, but it is, well, people put their career on the gravestone, I think, some people. Not all of them, but you know, David, the New York Times guy, what's the guy's name? David Brooks? There's the guy that used to be like the token conservative on the New York Times editorial page. I think his name is David something, Ayid Steitzach. And he wrote a book, I forgot what it was called, but his main like idea was that there are resume virtues and gravestone virtues. So he says, you see, you put certain talents, certain characters, the character traits you put on your resume, and other ones you put on in your eulogy, in your hesped, in your gravestone. And his claim was, how about you focus a little more on the ones you really believe in, which are the gravestone ones. So what's the interesting thing? That in our world, it's easier to talk about the resume virtues because we know what their goal is. You want to make money, you want to have a good career, so you know how to behave in that context. And we seem to, for some reason, think that the headstone virtues are totally arbitrary. They're just what you like, or just what a lot of people like, or something like that. But just by understanding what it is, you see, just by understanding what it is, professionalism is not just what a bunch of people like. That would be a very bad way of understanding it. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing from the outside, it's not just a thing that a lot of people like, in the sense that it makes them feel good or something. It's a way of being a person, a way of behaving in a certain context, okay, which has its own criteria and has its own idea of what it is to have a good relationship, a good professional relationship, right? Good professional conduct. And it includes like a whole story. It includes a whole world. It's objective in the sense that it's not about what anyone wants. It's not like you can't say, when you learn this, you actually learn to be, one very, very easy way to see it would be that to learn this is to learn to put yourself aside in some sense, right? When you learn to be professional, you're not learning to fulfill yourself. Of course, secondary goal might be selfish. But the activity of being professional is an anti-selfish activity, if we don't believe so much in this framing of selfishness. But in any case, it's not selfish in the sense of it's not based on what makes me feel something. It's not based on an internal feeling. It's based on learning a practice that has criteria external to you. This makes it objective already. You could see very easily that it's objective. Nobody can decide. You could try to change the culture and convince everyone that you should be less professional, and we should be more casual, things like that. But whatever it is in this context, you can't change it, or at least not directly, not easily. It's something that exists outside of you and that exists in the context of this community of people that think that this is a good way, right? And we should be able to use this to see that what we talked about as the life virtues are also things like that. So what they're not is not something that I just made up. It's something that makes me feel good or something like that. Just like being professional is not because it might make you feel good. Once you have the habit of being professional, you feel good when you behave successfully, excellently, right? Eretic, excellently in this way, in this context, when it's needed. But it's not about making myself feel good. In the same way, whatever the human virtues are, whatever the headstone virtues are, they're not ways of making yourself feel better. Even if, of course, they make you feel better if you're successful at them. But they are objective criteria that they're practices of life. So just like there's a good manager or a good professional or something like that, there is a good father. And you can't make up what a good father is. We could have discussions on certain limits, in certain discussions, but in the end of the day, if you... Now, this is a question, right? So now, does this make sense? What we see here is, from these examples, what we see here is that this kind of seeing starts from something that already exists. Starts weak, not only from a habit or a practice that already exists, but really already from a community of people that already exists, right? Whatever, there's a work community or there's a, right? And if I talk to someone about what a good father is, you're already existing within the context of a certain culture that defines what it means to be a good father. Any other, a good student, a good teacher, a good anything. Now, does this make sense? We could skip the kind of narrative things, but that just narrative is trying to get you to understand why there's a good person for his whole life. But okay. Now, what is the problem that this leads us to right away? The problem that this leads us to is a certain problem of relativism, right? Why? Because you thought, again, now this really goes back to a confusion, the same confusion that we had in the beginning, which made it hard for us to see what would mean the kind of wisdom that we're talking about. But you understand what I'm saying. This, whenever I say this, if I tell you, you had a question, right? What was the question? What kind of wisdom is to be good? Is there in this? The answer is, look around. There's a kind of wisdom in being a good father. And you could see that in this community, in this culture, everyone agrees that being a good father entails providing for your children financially and not so much emotionally, because a father's job is not to be emotional. Like, there's a virtue of being somewhat stoic and to be like a non-reactive, okay? For example, okay? And now someone comes to you and then you could see that if you live in this culture, you could see that that is how you're successful at being a father. And there's way you can work on attaining those traits and practicing them, and you could define them and all of that. But now, right away, you're going to tell me, okay, thank you very much. All you've taught me is a minhag. Very nice. There's a custom. Minhag, Lakewood, is to be such a kind of father. And if you want to be respected by them or something, or like just like my analogy of business, you want to be successful, you want to be respected or something, you want to be successful in this context, you will have to have these virtues. But you didn't show me anything about it being good. We were never in search for how to be mekayim, how to do certain customs. Everyone, that wasn't the problem. Our problem was finding a certain moral or certain goodness, a certain wisdom that shows you a certain goodness. And now when you told me that the starting point is a certain actually existing community that has specific practices, then you ruined it.
Yeah, but I mean, only partially. Meaning, if you have an idea, right, part of what we were talking about is that if you have a good idea of what a person is,
Okay.
You're saying, like, if I have a good idea of how secular business is and how secular business or whatever it is, American workplace business happens, so I can understand how to be a professional in that context, right? I can understand, hey, this is the business interactions are apersonal or whatever it is, right? So now I know how to be a good what good professionalism means, right? Or at least I can start to assimilate that into my
mm-hmm.
character. If you know what a person is, just by knowing, then you can understand what practice is further than, right?
Very, very good. But you'll realize that, again, I'll just explain to you the problem. You asked me this question last time, right? I said the word narrative, made you clear that this problem leads to. But the problem is that the kind of examples or the kind of starting point, the kind of things that you can see are not the kind of things that show you what a person is, right? They're the kind of things that show you what a specific kind of person is or a specific community of people think it is good to be.
Right, I mean, and the judge of, let's say, if professionalism is a virtue, would be to figure out if professionalism is good for people. Right, if it's good for human beings.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that what you're saying. But what I'm getting at is why I was trying to explain why last week you asked us this question. Now you're answering your own question, which is very nice. But we're gonna talk about this a second. But I'm trying to show you why this kind of seeing, which we do know what it is, right? We live most, like, just to be clear, some people don't know what this is. Okay, meaning to say, if you have no culture, or if you pretend, let's do another thing. If you pretend to do thinking without any culture in the background, without any tradition in the background, you could call it, then you would say, I have no idea what it is, right? Does this make sense? I don't even know what kind of thing you're talking about, right? Since I can give you examples of, like, here there's a virtue called professionalism, over there there's a virtue called being a lambdan, over there there's a virtue called being honest, whatever virtues you believe in, or you not believe in, you practice, right? Which you see the kind of people that they create. Now I can start discussing with you which one of these is the human one or something like that. Or is there such a thing for a human as such, right? So the first thing you'll notice is that if you would not have had any of this, right? Now, is there such a person? Good question. But it's for sure a conversation that acts that way, right? Most of the time when we have the conversation of let's find out what's good, we don't start with looking at these kind of good things. We start at some abstract point, just like prove to me what's good in the same way that you're going to prove to me that some mathematical formula or something like that. So that we're denying that as a starting point, that there's a reason for doing that, right? That makes sense, because I'm not looking for what some people like or what some people think is good, even I'm looking for what really is good, right? So if I wouldn't have such a context at all, and maybe in some sense, I'm not sure if this is true, but maybe in some sense many people, I don't really know those people, but there's, like, you get the feeling from certain conversations that people have grown up like that, especially if you grow up hyper, like, you should just be looking for your own good or your own, pursue your passion, things like that, which taken to the extreme is just a form of saying there is no such a, there's no criteria of anything, right? Art is what makes what you like, and the successful person is what everyone should follow their own bliss, and there isn't anything, in any sense, right? You know, people make this claim for art, right? There's no such a thing as good art. Good art is what museums hang up, right? What you can sell. Which is a different art, how to sell things. But in any case, right? But people, at least in the relative moral sense, people pretend, and there might be such cultures. I'm not sure there's actually cultures that have no virtues, but there might be cultures, and there are. You get this vibe from many people that, like, where do I start? What do you mean? I don't see people behaving in any specific way that they think is good. That's one thing. And like I said, the second thing is that for sure, when we have the conversation, we seem to often start off from such a starting point, like, I don't know, who said it's good? What's why is it better to be honest than to be a liar? What's good about it? Right? And I can't really answer this question. You'll notice I don't even claim to have a way to answer this question. For sure not directly. All I can say is, wait, what I answered you now is to say something like this. Look, there's this group of people. And there's different views, different... You could see that there's... Right away, when I say this, you see that there's different groups with different virtues that they pursue and different ways in which they work out, right? And we say, look, there's this group of people. We have a society that works on a specific kind of honesty, on a specific assumption that people are not always out to get you, right? And it's a good thing. It makes the world work. It makes these people have a good life, and it makes this community work well, okay? And if you imagine a different community who's based on lying, it wouldn't work in the same way. Or could I prove that this one is better? Maybe yes, maybe not. That wasn't my point. I just show you that, look, in this context, it's very important. If you're going to start lying, if you're going to start being a liar, you're going to be less successful at being a person that works with this group well. You're going to be a failure. But now you'll notice right away that I told you something very low. You say, okay, very nice. I'm a failure because this system rewards being truthful, assuming that it's so, right? But if there's a system that, if I can imagine a world where everyone is lying, and I don't know, there's a different system. Okay, I don't know. Maybe there's already, we're already living in that world. And why would I don't know, everyone is just out to get for themselves, and you protect yourself, no problem, what's wrong, right? I don't even see the kind of thing that's called being honest. What does that even mean? Or what kind of, I wouldn't even have anywhere, right? I wouldn't have anywhere to start from if that would be the case. And even after I told you, look, there's this group of people that are honest, and they have this kind of way of being people, you say, okay, very nice, so there's such a group of people. What did you show me? So this is the problem. This is the problem that by answering the question of what kind of knowledge would be a knowledge of the good action, I refer to a very specific context, necessarily so, and you'll see why. You right away say, okay, very cute, so that's how it is in your context. Many people have read different accounts of ethics and said, okay, it sounds like in Athens, that's what the Chosh of Eden thought, that is good. What do I care about? So, what's the tadits for this? So this is the question that arises, and you'll see very easily some reason why it arises, and like you mentioned, what should have been, what supposedly is the answer, and why nowadays people actually do get very stuck on this and try to look for different ways, and we'll discuss a little bit of this. So what happened was like this. So I have to talk about at least three different parts of the story. Okay, I'll give you some history to understand why it's like this. One part is, if you go back all the way to Aristotle himself, you'll see that he seems to be very comfortable with doing this kind of derivation. Like, yes, in our city, this is the minhag. This is how we see a good person. He doesn't even really think, he knows that there are barbarians. There's people outside who have bad habits, and they're just bad people. He very clearly associates, and he doesn't really talk about being a good, he never says, this is my book of how to be a good Greek. It's always about how to be a good person. But he doesn't really, people sometimes say he doesn't even realize that what he describes as a good person is really just a good Greek. And sometimes Jewish people or Christian people read it and say, well, what do you mean? I have a whole different list of virtues which makes a person a good person. Your ideal person is not my ideal person. And we could discuss different differences when we get to it. And like, very cute, but like, what's going on here? And there's something going on in the sense that he doesn't even think this is a problem. Right? So that's step number one. That's an interesting, it's a very important step to notice. In the next class, I'll try to give an explanation of what I think is really going on in that stage, why he thinks it's not a problem, and why it could work to get somewhere real. But maybe we'll get to that. Okay, step two is like this, okay? And then all these things are in all sources. I'm not, like I said, nobody here is reading enough text to be able to even see if I'm saying shtism, so it's not relevant what it says and what it doesn't say. Then there's another story, okay? Step two of the story, or let's call it another story, and it doesn't matter for the resources right now, which is very focused, like on what Shmuley said, very focused on the idea that it's true, forget about this discussion, like sort of marginalize this kind of discussion, which is very explicit in Aristotle, where he says we're starting off with what we all good people consider to be good, and of course, there's a circularity there, right? And there's a different discussion that starts off with a much more rational starting point, right? It starts off, and we read this in the Rambam in the Akdamot Persha Mishnah a long time ago, so that is a source that we did read here, which starts off with the idea that just like, and this is just like there is a good for each kind of practice, there should be also a good for a person. It would be very weird if there's a good handyman and a good teacher and not a good human. Because all these things seem to be just things that humans do. Why are we going to be also a good human? Of course, it's not an argument, it's not a proof. Maybe there isn't a good human. Because it's not a defined enough thing. That's what starts the whole problem, that humans do too many things. And it's hard to define what they are. But he had a method, and we went through the method for discovering what is actually a good human, what are humans for. And according to that, we discovered what a good human is. And then we do have an answer to this question in the most broad terms. And we sort of don't even need, right? We lose the need for this whole, we really don't need this whole looking at specific contexts, specific communities, where you see that within this community it actually is good. It's easy to see that if you want to belong to this community, you do have to have these virtues to flourish within this community, and so on. We could sort of skip that whole step, it seemed to people at least, and I don't think that's entirely correct, but if you focus very much on this like derivation of like what is a human, we get like human as a rational, so really to be a good human, what defines, what differentiates humans, right, their important characteristic is that they're rational, so being good human means acting always rationally, and then we figure out what that means, of course, not very determined, that still got a lot of questions what that means, but at least we have a framework for saying what a good human is, right? And that's a framework that you see in the Rambam, and in a certain sense, the religious followers of Aristotle very much took this aspect of his thought, and this very much focused on this story, and this seems to make all of ethics into really scientific. Like there is a good human in the same way there's a good anything. We just have to find out what a good human, and since we do know what a human is, we could know that. We have a method to find out what humans are, meaning what they're for, not what they are and how they work, right? What they're for, which is really what we want to know anytime we ask something what it is. So we could also tell you how to be a good one in that way. Okay? Does this actually get you to very specific things like having courage? Good question. Okay? But at least they're very focused on these kinds of things. Now, that's another step, okay? You get that, right? We've done some work on this. Now, according to that step, it's interesting to think. So why did Aristotle then say, right? He did say that, and the Rambam didn't copy this from him. He did, maybe Miramis, I don't know, but he did say that if you didn't have a good education, you're not going to get anything from my drusha, from my learning ethics. According to this, he should have been able to get, right? Because anyone who understands well enough could understand that a human being is for this, and therefore you should focus on that, and so on. It seems to be a logical derivation. It doesn't seem to be correct what he says then, that in order to start with ethics, we need to have a good upbringing as a starting point. Right? And there's a question. This strong emphasis on that didn't exist in these people that followed him that way, in the same way, because of this. Now, what happened later? Did we discuss this? I don't remember. That's the second story, okay? So you see the two things. A third thing that happened, a third maase shayu kachoyu, that, for all kinds of reasons, as you know, people stopped believing in their existence of a human nature. Or a nature for everything, for anything. And we call v'chaim for a human nature. Actually, sometimes people did believe there's a human nature, but there isn't a nature for anything else. Some people didn't believe that there's a nature for anything else, but there is a fair human. And the opposite, but in more or less, people, and for various reasons, what's known as the new science and so on, in modern science and modern psychology, which is a part of science, all of that comes together to people mostly stopping to believe that it would be a possibility to find out what humans are for. In the natural scientific sense. Nachon? That's something that happened.
What do you mean by that?
It's just history. Historical story. If you read, people say all kinds of things like, I don't have the, like, one argument now that says this, but people in the sense there was, like, Darwin, for example, would tell you, that this, like, would be a very clear example. Darwin would tell you, there's no such thing as human because there's no such thing as anything. Humans is just whatever survives this process of evolution. While Aristotle very clear thinks there's such a concept, there's like a nature, like a form, there's something called being a human, which is what makes humans human and what they're for. And he said they're not for anything, they're just for winning the survival game. For example, you could see very clearly how that's does not necessarily so. You could still have evolution together with this, but you could see how that like view, that metaphysical view, is anti the view that there's such a thing as human nature, right? And so on. And a lot of, but that's not the only reason. There's a lot more going on. And basically, Like if you ask, and there's also, I have to say, there's also a politics, a ethics, or more of a politics than an ethics, that goes along with this, right? That's very connected to this. If you go around telling people that they're less of a complete human, right? Because this whole theory tells you how to be a complete, how to be a perfect human being, right? And then you say anyone that isn't ethical in my sense is less of a human being, right? And then you get accused by everyone for being a Nazi because he just dehumanized a bunch of people, or maybe all of them. Like the Rambam, some these like extremists, like said, there's like five humans in the world, everyone else is potential humans. And you get accused for being extremely elitist and extremely all kind of things that are said nowadays to be very bad. So that's another thing, but it's connected one with the other. Like when we say that the part of being a good liberal, which is basically a good person, according to, you see that there is virtue ethics also in liberalism, because a liberal is a good person, anyone else is a bad person. But they say that anyone that believes that there is a good way of life and anyone else is basically not succeeding at being a human is a really horrible person, and we can only live in peace with others by not believing that. Right? We could only live in peace by assuming that everyone chooses their own good. There isn't really a human good. It's just a choice. You choose your own good. You could follow whatever you want. Of course, as long as you don't hurt me, because we have maybe a social contract or maybe for other reasons, but not because there's a really good way to be a human being. It's not really, we don't even claim there's anything wrong with being a murderer. It's only that it hurts me, right? Of course, nobody's consistent about this, but that's like the liberal theory originally. Of course, then you have to be a real libertarian and a lot of things. Nobody's consistent. But the point is, these are the two important things in the modern time that cause people to not be very reluctant to base their ethics on what it means to be a human being. There's a scientific reason and there's a political reason, like a moral reason. People see it as a moral thing. It's immoral to believe, according to, again, it's kind of hard to justify it because I don't really think this, but that you notice that this is what all so-called good people nowadays believe, that it's immoral to believe that there is people that are better at being people than others. In the real sense, of course, nobody really thinks there are good and bad people, so that's why nobody is really consistent, but that's what people believe. And that, if you say that, that leads you to treat, not, for example, they say that leads you to treat other people not nicely. I don't know if that's true. That's not necessarily like a logic, but that's what people think. And anyways, and there's a long history behind all of this. That's the history of modern political thought and modern metaphysics of nature. So there's a long, long history about all of this. And again, nobody here read enough to be able to challenge me on it, so you're just going to have to believe me or not. Now, these are both reasons, and there might be more reasons, but these are two important reasons for why. This is, notice, this is, I'm saying this so you should understand how the world works nowadays, how discourse, what it's based on, right? These are the two important reasons why, even though people who would like to talk about ethics in a more real way can't do it, can't answer that answer. You can't say what Shmuley said. Yeah. And he learned from the Rambam. Sorry there. So there, now, what happened? So, but what do they say? What did happen? Oh, now I have to tell you a fourth thing. How much number am I up to? Okay, now you have to know a fourth thing. So two things happened, okay? Two more important points of history. And this like story of history is like something that is at the base of all of everything that we do, so we have to like at least have the points now, right? Two more things happened. One thing was that there was a whole movement of people called the early modern or the modern ethicist, which tried very hard to create an ethics not based on what a human being is. One of these people, his name is Immanuel Kant, very important. Another one even would be John Stuart Mill. These are said to be, when you go to university, they teach you that there's two theories of ethics. One is Kant's third version and one is Mill's version. Of course, there's a lot of in-between versions, but those are the two basic versions. But the important thing about both of them is that both of them are, and of course, nowadays they sometimes teach you the third one, which is Aristotle's version. But the important thing about both of them, that's the fifth step that I'll tell you. But the important thing about both of them is that they both tried very hard to save ethics, to remain with a theory, with a concept of what, okay, we'll see what the concept is. It actually turns into a different concept, but to remain with some kind of concept of the good actions without this basis of what we discussed, which is what the human is and therefore what human happiness is and so on. So either, and this, we're not getting to be able to talk about what these attempts were in a lot of detail, but two important things to know about these attempts. Of course, You know something? Let's skip it. Let's skip it. What is attempts? I can talk about it in a second because I'm already late. But what happened was that these attempts, according now, that those were the attempts, and very important, if you read any modern Jewish thinkers, you'll notice that they're all Kantians. We say this a lot of times, but it seems to be what at least every Litvak assumes. Some Hasidim are not Kantians, but most Litvaks at least are Kantians because they're modern people. Hasidim are confused, sometimes modern and sometimes not, so they're not always entirely Kantian. But Litvaks are 100% Kantian, and that's all because the way they think of what the good is, which for them is the keeping the Torah, but still, what it means to be good means what Kant thought it means. Okay, let's not... you should know this already if you listen to enough drushes. But skipping, I want to get to a different point. And if you want to know about this, you ask me afterwards if it's time, a second. Point is now. So that was the theory. What happened with these attempts is that they failed. At least that is the presumption of the whole school of thought that we are trying to repeat and learn from when we're trying to understand the Rambam, which is based on Aristotle and all these ancient, old kind of thoughts. Their main contention is that this saving of ethics from not having metaphysics and from not having politics didn't work. For various reasons, and we should get into some of the reasons, but they didn't work. In other words, they say Kant doesn't teach you how to be a good person, nor does John Stuart Mill. So, therefore, and if you read Alistair MacLean's book, he has specific problems why he thinks it failed and so on. The tzachakl is that they think that all these things fail. So we end up back in a very hard place, which is that either we have no idea of what is good is, so basically we're back to saying what many people seem to be happy, saying that you just do whatever you want, and that's not possible anyways, we discussed once, but that's a different discussion. Or we don't have another solution. So came a bunch of chachomim, and they tried to do something like this. This is the interesting thing that happened. They tried very hard to start talking about ethics in a Aristotelian sense, in an ancient sense. Now, what did they do? So this is the important thing. This is the important thing, and this is, I think there's something very useful, but there's something missing. The important thing is like this. So we're going to have to bring in at least one point of what the new way was and where Aristotle differs. One important thing is that Kant and Mill, although they have very different versions of what it means to be good, they share the same demands for what ethical theory has to be. And that demand is that it should be universal. Naya klal, and you'll notice, this is very important, you have to notice this, that until these Zman Gedoyle Achroinim came, nobody has such a demand from an ethical theory. It's weird that they didn't have, or not in the same way that we have it. They had it, but in a different way. What does universal mean? Universal means that according to Immanuel Kant, and this is explicit, if you read like his, not only that, like Kant's idea of what ethics is actions that are universalizable, right? Kant famously said that what's the categorical imperative, what you need to do, what you are obligated to do by virtue of being a rational being is do the things that can be a general rule, right? That's what you have to do. So he's like, and John Stuart Mill doesn't say you have to do it. He says you have to do the things that will cause the most pleasure for the most people. But again, he's saying, trying to, starting off, his search is for something that is a universal command or according to Kant, or universal desire, according to Mill, but still something that is a general abstract rule, which is what he understands to be something universal, and that's what makes it true, that's what makes it real, that's what makes it objective. Otherwise, he says, you're just following your bliss and doing whatever you want. That's not ethical, right? And this is also why Kant goes so far to accuse Aristotle of not being ethical, right? Because Aristotle said that you should follow your bliss. Okay, your happiness. You are, according to Aristotle, ethics is about becoming the best kind of person, which is the happiest kind of person. Says Kant, what's ethical about that? That's just selfish. Putting happiness as the goal. But what we notice here is that there's a new demand. Aristotle didn't think that this is an important demand. And his ethics didn't work in the way of looking for something universal. Okay? So, now, so you see something very interesting happening, which is that And we have to, of course, think a lot more about what this exactly means for something to be universal and in which ways. But we see something very interesting happening, was that because, now remember that Kant denied Aristotle's metaphysics, said there aren't really ends in nature and so on. And people are not reformed, but also he just assumes this, not only assumes it, he tries to prove it. So we see something interesting. Because we don't believe in, we can call it inherent teleology, right? We don't believe in nature having ends, nature having its own good, which is what Aristotle meant when he said human happiness. He didn't mean searching, right? Kant almost seems to think that what that means, doesn't make this mistake, but he almost seems to think that that means just looking for the being happy, which is not good. But it does think, for Aristotle, that's something objective. Because we lost this kind of science, this is the sheer assumption of the moderns. We don't believe in that kind of science. It's not true, as they say, it's not true. Therefore, we end up either having the low kind of thing that's, of course, not ethical, which is just following what makes you happy. John Stuart Mill tries to even have that and still claim to have an ethical theory, because it's not, he tries to make that objective, like what makes everyone pleasure. But in any case, the only way we can have something that is even pretends to be ethical is by having something entirely outside of nature, transcendent. This is why Kant's, both his theology and his ethics, are in some sense more transcendent than Aristotle's. Sometimes people claim that it's Platonic. Because his idea of what is good is not what is good for a human being, for any human being. He doesn't start by looking at humans or at human communities or what makes people happy or anything like that. He starts at looking at what can be a general rule for, maybe it could even be a general rule for God, right? You'll notice that according to Aristotle, God can't, a very important difference. You'll notice that modern Jewish thinkers all are worried with the question if God has to be ethical. According to Aristotle, this question doesn't make any sense. You could watch my course with Antonio, which talks about the Platonic view of this. In what sense can God be ethical? And we have this idea of emulating God, and then if God is ethical, what it would mean? Okay. But in any case, what Aristotle means by ethics, God can't have, because ethics means the perfection of a human being. God isn't a human being, he doesn't need to be perfected, even in the sense that he's not human. So this whole discussion doesn't make sense. But according to Kant, it sort of makes sense, because if ethics is an obligation to act in a very universal sense, entirely abstract sense, maybe that's even bigger than God, and maybe that's what God means, whatever, all kind of things. You could see that this is something so divorced from humanity, so divorced from where humans actually live, but that's what he needs for ethics to be real, for them to be objective, okay? Now, okay, that's, you understand this step? Now, since the fifth step, the final step, which we're talking about, is that people realize that this doesn't work. It doesn't work both because it puts a too high demand on itself, for one reason. You'll notice this, I noticed this very much in the Musar movement, right? Or people like Ashlag or other people, or even some versions of Hasidus like Kotzk, where you see that they have a very Kantian demand of themselves to be entirely altruistic, non-selfish, to mean God. They interpret Lishma and so on as doing things for something else and not for you. And then they realize that that's impossible. It's not human. It's not possible. You're stuck in a loop. Because why are you doing it? Because it makes you feel good. Okay, so it's for yourself. So you end up with such messed up psychologies, and it turns out to be basically an impossible demand. And of course, then maybe you have to accept Jesus so he should save you from these impossible human demands, okay. And so on. But this is something that happens. So that's where one way we can see it stops. And not only that, so that's one problem, okay, it's impossible. Another problem is that it's not useful, okay? Even in the sense that let's put this as a goal, it doesn't actually make us good. Because the problems that we have for making good are a different one. The problems, the kind of dilemmas that we have, right? When we talk about moral dilemmas, which is another very modern construct, but the kind of questions that we have, how to act, none of them are solved by saying, don't be selfish. You'll notice. None of them are solved by saying, act according to a general rule. Almost none of them are solved. We have to invent different intermediate rules between that and like our actions to make any sense of anything. Most of our problems are about our character, actually. Most of our problems are about how to behave in specific contexts. We don't ever have the problem of how to behave in the universal context. Unless you're a god, maybe then you'll have the problem. But human beings always have problems of how to act in specific contexts, not in universal contexts. Why would Kant's idea of me acting in a universal way be a moral idea? It's not even clear that it's at all moral. And this is why I'm not going to...
In the sense that there's nowhere it finds substantiation, like there's no...
It's not useful.
There's no non-context.
Nobody has become a good person by working with Kant's way. At least that's the claim. Or very few people.
Kant doesn't claim it does either. He claims that you just do the right.
Thank you very much. And therefore, his details are his details of his ethics are not actually Kantian. They're just Christian and Lutheran. Where did he get the idea that it's bad to lie? Not from his thing, because I could just as easily invent a theory that it's good for everyone to lie. So the actual details don't come from it. It comes from virtue. It comes from what he understands a good person to be. In the same way, no human being ever gets much use out of these kind of universal judgments. What we get out of a particular judgments. Okay, so there's at least like three different things. One is that the man that's too high, and in other words, well, I'll give you three different problems with this. There's even more. Three different problems with this kind of way, and I'm going too fast now. One is that the demand is too high. I told you it's too high for human beings. Human beings don't actually act in the way that Kant wants you to act. For being to be minimally moral, according to Kant, you have to act only from the motive of duty, which just seems to not be human, at least. Maybe it's German, I don't know, I don't think it's human. The second problem is that it's not useful enough. Our kind of questions that we have don't get answered by that. Right? The third thing, which is another way of saying the first thing, would be that it's very hard to prove. It's not actually demonstrable, right? Even Kant sort of agrees as he thinks that it's like you need to invent all kind of things that are inbuilt into us and so on to get to it. Like, why would I? What would be the reason? Once we're looking for something abstract, this is another aspect of it being a too high demand to actually reach. If we're looking for something entirely abstract, where's the proof for this? Who told you?
What are you reasoning from to get there?
Yeah. Well, did God tell you? Thank you very much. Then you're back. But if you don't have like a literal revelation, and Kant sort of does have this answer. Kant's answer is that God told us, even though he told us by giving us this idea, but he only gave the idea to Kant. He doesn't actually give the idea to anyone. So, but in any case, if it's like supposed to be rational, it's not rational. Nothing proves that it should be, right? So, these are at least three ways in which this kind of ethics fails. Okay? If you want to do the other version, the totalitarian version, there's even more problems with it, but we're not getting into it. So, the point of this is, so therefore, when came the newer people, and a bunch of other problems, but these are like the main, I think these are some of the main problems. Came a whole movement of people, like Elizabeth Anscombe was maybe one of the first in the 20th century to say this very explicitly, and then a whole bunch of other tzaddikim, and they all said that we've got to return, if we want ethics to be a thing at all, which we seem to want, we can't do these ways, we can't support either Kant or Mill or any of these meta-ethical positions. What we end up when we do that, and this is also part of history, what we end up when we do that is with something that's something called emotivism, or saying that all ethics boils down is to saying I disapprove of something because I don't like it. So we're back to not ethics, basically. Therefore, because we can't reach the demands of Kant and we can't have anything in between, so therefore it's either that or nothing. So they said that we're going to try to go back to the old-fashioned Aristotle way. That's what happened. Well, that's what some people tried to do. Because now, what problem do they have? But they still have very strong belief that we don't believe in true ends in nature. And still have a very strong belief that we can't have a politics based on what is good for humans. These two beliefs, almost none of these people that we read, that we're referring to, are courageous enough, or whatever you want to call it, to throw away those beliefs. And they're explicit about this. They say, we can try to be Aristotelians, but we're neo-Aristotelians because we do not accept Aristotle's metaphysics. And there's a big debate in this neo-Aristotelian virtue ethics theorists to what extent this is actually possible, right? Some interpreters of Aristotle claimed that, no, it doesn't work. Aristotle's ethics is based on his metaphysics. If you want to be Aristotelian, you have to accept metaphysics. Of course, there are Catholics, people, Thomists, too, who do that. And maybe some Jews that do that. I don't know of any very, very good ones. But otherwise, I mean, of course, Chassidus basically is a kind of that and so on, but they're not part of this conversation for some reason. Or you can have something else. You can't have Aristotelian ethics. The big claim, and this I think it's an important claim, the big claim of neo-Aristotelians is that you could. you could have Aristotelian ethics without Aristotelian metaphysics and without Aristotelian politics or whatever that is, not clear.
You just don't have the final component of it, meaning you
exactly.
just have the,
and what we discussed, so very important,
ethics,
so very
right?
important, what we discussed about showing you how it's normal. So this is, but this is important because I like this, because this is actually something Aristotle himself liked and it's very useful. We need to try to start from normal every day and looking around at how the world works and how people are becoming good. And what these people very much try to do is to show how if you just normal, we don't have to, if you start with metaphysics, it's not a good place to start. I agree with this. And but you might have to end there, but that's a different discussion. That's my next class, but Aristotle starts there and doesn't end there. But these people, they all did a very important service, which is they tried as much as they could to show without doing this metaphysics, without saying, I know what a human is and therefore this is how you should act, without saying that, just by making arguments that make sense to modern ears, because when you say this, I know what a human is, it's not, besides with the like just believing that it was disproven by Chvaisnish too, also it just doesn't make sense. People don't know what that means, right? Most people that didn't come to my class don't know what that means. So therefore they try very hard to give you different language and different words for talking about what it would mean, practices of the good, what would moral practice mean, what would immoral wisdom mean, without starting off with some metaphysics that nobody understands. And all of these languages, which I discussed, the language of narrative and the language of learning, receiving an eye for certain art, all these kinds of things are part of that attempt. And of course, because of it refusing to accept a one criteria of what human nature is, they all end up with questions of pluralism. And this, but this is not, this is by design.
Because they don't
this
have
is by design. They sort of want to end up with a certain pluralism. Of course, there's a problem. There's also ways of solving it. I have to talk about both ways of solving it and how I think the original way of doing this was. But this is by design that we end up with these problems, because in some sense, at least, some of people might say, no problem, maybe there are many ways of being a good person, but all of them will need this kind of wisdom.
This is also indeterminate, meaning there is no...
And maybe there isn't a way to... Maybe it's not important. Maybe we don't have a way to decide between two versions, between two cultures, which is the correct culture, or we don't need to do that because... Was there ever a person without culture? There isn't really such a person. There are people.
How would we diagnose a bad society in this
world? We wouldn't. It's not something that they're interested in doing. Just to be clear, this is by design. Martha Nussbaum wrote a whole thing, critical of McIntyre. Basically, this is by design. The liberal belief is that we shouldn't be doing this, remember. So they don't want to end up to be able to do that. They don't want. If you don't want, then you can't do anything. So I'm just explaining it's by design. And I think that there's a great value in these arguments because we need to have ways to start off with talking about these things without accepting a whole metaphysics that is hard to explain and maybe true or not true. That's a different question. But it's by design that we end up with a question of pluralism, and there are also valuable responses to why that's not a problem. Because the important question is, why doesn't that mean that you don't have an ethical theory at all? Why aren't you just relativist? Right? Why aren't you just saying that ethics means whatever anyone likes or whatever any group of people likes, which is not much better. And so there are both valuable responses to that, in some sense, and what did I say? And some good responses for why. So in other sense, why we don't really need, and that we have to get to this. And so these are two things that we have to do. Still, we have to discuss why the sort of modern demand for universal, for ethics being universal, which is what we're really talking about here when we say this is if there's two, then it's a problem. It's not entirely sure. I'm not. So let me finish because I see it's already 10 o'clock. One thing is, it's not clear that it's really a problem at all, right? It's not clear that ethics means something that all humans should do because they're humans, at least when we get down to particulars. We might make a difference between a very general description of the theory and a particular things of what you should do. But in some sense, but since we started with particulars, we could talk about that. It's not clear that to have a theory of what is good means a theory of what every human as a human should do. It could be that it doesn't demand that. Kant thinks it demands that, it might not demand that. I think there's a lot of value in thinking in that way because none of us are human, qua human. All of us are a certain kind of human in a certain culture. Some of us are in two cultures or three, but nobody is in zero. Right? So the interesting question is actually to know if you're in two cultures, the interesting question is how to navigate that. It's not really an interesting question to figure out what to do if I wouldn't. People think that that's the question. People always think the question of prove me something is if I would have been born without a culture, what would I have done? Like I said, the people think the proof for anything would have to be like that. But it's not clear that that's the kind of proof that we need ever. And we have to discuss this. And secondly, that's one thing, and there's a lot of important distinctions to be made here. And there's also an option of just yes, accepting the metaphysics, and then we have less of this problem. Of course, we still have problems, just to be clear. We still don't know very easily what to do. And the third thing which we should do is that to try to describe how it was originally understood, how the Rambam himself, for example, would have understood this question. The Rambam doesn't think that all ethics is universal, but he does think that there's a universal basis for ethics, and he does, right, how do we know that he doesn't think that all ethics is universal? Because he thinks that the Torah is just a training for ethics, and he doesn't think that every guy has to do the Torah, very obviously. So there's something very interesting in this. And he does think that there's a way, and he also probably would agree, or at least Aristotle would say, that we have to start with, and Rama also agrees that we have to start with education, which is not something that's understood, right? We have to start with just creating habits, and that would lead you to be able to see something universal or something really true out of that. So that's another thing we have to explain. So those are three things to discuss next time.